I kept quiet. Trujillo smiled grimly.
"Food for thought, Perry," he said. "Something for you to consider the next time you and your wife are slamming the door on the rest of us at one of our advisory meetings. I trust you'll do what you think is best for the colony."
He glanced over my shoulder, looking at something beyond it.
"I think our daughters have met," he said.
I turned around to see Zoe talking animatedly with one of the girls I had seen earlier. She was the one who had beckoned Zoe over.
"It appears they have," I said. "They seem to get along," Trujillo said. "Our Roanoke colony starts there, I think. Maybe we can follow their example."
"I'm not sure I can swallow the idea of a selfless Manfred Trujillo," Jane said. She had propped herself up in bed. Babar lolled at the end of the bed, his tail thumping contentedly.
"There's two of us," I said.
I was sitting in the chair next to the bed.
"The problem is, I can't entirely discount what he's saying either."
"Why not?" Jane said. She began to reach for the pitcher of water she had at the bedside table, but was awkwardly positioned. I took the pitcher and the glass next to it and started pouring.
"You remember what Hickory said about Roanoke Planet?"
I said, handing her the glass.
"Thanks,"
she said, and downed the entire glass in about 5 seconds.
"Wow,"
I said.
"You sure you're feeling better?"
"I'm fine," she said.
"I'm just thirsty."
She handed the glass back to me. I poured her more water. She sipped this one more moderately.
"Roanoke Planet?"
she said, prompting me.
"Hickory said that Roanoke Planet was still under the control of the Oban," I said.
"If the Department of Colonization really thinks this colony is going to fail, that might actually make sense."
"Why trade for a planet you know your colonists aren't going to keep?" Jane said.
"Exactly," I said.
"And there's another thing. I was in the cargo hold today, going over the manifest with the cargo chief, and he mentioned that we were packing a whole lot of obsolete equipment."
"That's probably to do with the Mennonites," Jane said, and sipped her water again.
"Well, that's what I said, too," I said. "But after I talked to Trujillo, I went through the manifest again. The cargo chief was right. There's more obsolete equipment there than we can chalk up to the Mennonites."
"We're under-equipped," Jane said.
"That's the thing," I said. "We're not under-equipped. We have a whole bunch of obsolete equipment, but it's not in place of more modern equipment. It's there in addition to it."
Jane considered this.
"What do you think it means?"
she asked.
"I don't know that it means anything," I said. "Supply error happens all the time. I remember one time when I was in the CDF we were shipped dress socks instead of medical supplies. Maybe this is that kind of screw-up, a couple of degrees of magnitude larger."
"We should ask General Rybicki about it," Jane said.
"He's off the station," I said. "He left this morning for Coral, of all places. His office says he's overseeing the diagnostics of a new planetary defense grid. He won't be back for our weak standard. I asked his office to look into the colony's inventory for me, but it's not a high priority for them. It's not an obvious problem for the well-being of the colony. They have other things to worry about before we ship out. But maybe we're missing something."
"If we're missing something, we don't have a lot of time to find it," Jane said.
"I know," I said. "As much as I'd like to peg Trujillo as just another self-aggrandizing prick, we have to work on the theory that he might actually have the interests of the colony at heart. It's galling, all things considered."
"There's the possibility he's a self-aggrandizing prick and he has the interests of the colony at heart," Jane said.
"Oh, you always look on the bright side," I said.
"Have Savitri go through the manifest with an eye toward what we might be missing," Jane said. "I had her do a lot of research on recent seed colonies. If there's something missing, she'll find it."
"You're giving her a lot of work," I said.
Jane shrugged. "You always underutilized Savitri," Jane said. "That's why I hired her. She was capable of a lot more than you gave her. Although it's not entirely your fault. The worst you had to deal with were those idiot Chinglepet brothers."
"Oh, you're just saying that because you never had to deal with them," I said. "You should have tried it. One time."
"If I had dealt with them, one time would be all I needed,"
Jane said. "How was your thing today with General Zeilard?" I asked, changing the subject before my competence could be questioned further.
"It was fine," Jane said. "He was saying some of the things Trujillo was saying to you today, actually."
"That the DOC wants the colony to fail?" I asked.
"No," Jane said. "That there's a lot of political maneuvering going on that you and I don't know much about."
"Like what?" I asked.
"He didn't get into specifics," Jane said. "He said that was because he was confident in our ability to handle things. He asked me if I wanted my old Special Forces body back, just in case."
"Oh, that General Zeilard," I said. "A first-class kidder."
"He wasn't entirely joking," Jane said, and then raised a placating hand when I gave her my best confused look. "He doesn't have my old body on hand. That's not what I mean. He just means he'd prefer not to have me go to this colony with an unmodified human body."
"That's a cheerful thought," I said. I noticed Jane had begun to sweat. I felt her forehead. "I think you actually have a fever. That's new."
"Unmodified body," Jane said. "Had to happen sometime."
"I'll get you some more water," I said.
"No," Jane said. "I'm not thirsty. I feel like I'm starving, though."
"I'll see if I can get you something from the galley," I said. "What do you want?"
"What have they got?" Jane said.
"Pretty much everything," I said.
"Good," Jane said. "I'll have one of everything."
I reached for my PDA to contact the galley.
"It's a good thing the Magellan is carrying a double load of food," I said.
"The way I feel right now, it won't be carrying it for long," Jane said.
"All right," I said.
"But I think the old saying is that you should starve a fever."
"In this case," Jane said, "the old saying is dead wrong."
Chapter 4
"It's like a New Year's Eve party,"
Zoe said, looking around the recreation deck from our perch on a small dais at the mass of colonists celebrating around us. After a week of travel by the Magellan, we were less than 5 minutes from the skip to Roanoke.
"It's exactly like a New Year's Eve party," I said. "When we skip, the colony's clock officially starts. It'll be second one of minute one of day one of year one, Roanoke time. Get ready for days that are 25 hours, 8 minutes long, and years that are 305 days long."
"I'll have birthdays more often," Zoe said.
"Yes," I said, "and your birthdays will last longer."
Beside me and Zoe, Savitri and Jane were discussing something Savitri had queried in her PDA. I thought of ribbing them about catching up on work, now of all times, but then I thought better of it. The two of them had quickly become the organizational nexus of the colonial leadership, which was not at all surprising. If they felt something needed to be dealt with right that moment, it probably did. Jane and Savitri were the brains of the outfit. I was the public relations guy. Over the course of the week, I spent several hours with each colonist group, answering their questions about Roanoke, myself and Jane, and anything else they wanted to know about. Each group had its quirks and curiosities. The colonists from Erie seemed a bit distant, possibly reflecting the opinion of Trujillo, who sat in the back of the group while I talked, but warmed up when I played the idiot and trotted out the fractured Spanish I learned in high school, which led to a discussion of the new Spanish words that had been coined on Erie for native plants and animals. The Mennonites from Kyoto, on the other hand, started off genially by presenting me with a fruit cobbler. That pleasantry out of the way, they then grilled me mercilessly on every aspect of colonial management, much to the amusement of Hiram Yoder.
"We live a simple life, but we're not simple," he told me afterward.
The colonists from Khartoum were still upset about not being birthed according to planetary origin. The ones from Franklin wanted to know how much support we would have from the Colonial Union, and whether they could travel back to Franklin for visits. Albion's colonists wondered what plans were in place if Roanoke were attacked. The ones from Phoenix wanted to know if I thought they would have enough time after a busy day of colonizing to start a softball league. Questions and problems large and small, immense and trivial, critical and frivolous, all of them got pitched to me, and it was my job to gamely field them and try to help people to come away, if
not satisfied with the answers, then at least satisfied that their concerns were taken seriously. In this, my recent experience as an ombudsman turned out to be invaluable. Not just because I had experience in finding answers and solving problems, but because I had several years' practice in listening to people and reassuring them something would get done. By the end of our week on the Magellan, I had colonists coming up to me to help them settle bar bets and petty annoyances. It seemed like old times.